Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio. Brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com. Now, here's your host.
Lee Cantor here, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a good one, but it's important to recognize our sponsor, OnPay, before we get started, because without them, we could not be sharing these stories. Today on Atlanta Business Radio, we have LaVonda Brown with iGauge. Welcome, LaVonda.
Thank you for having me today.
Well, before we get too far into things, tell us about iGauge. How are you serving folks?
iGauge is basically a software that uses computer vision, and it's able to take a picture of your eye and determine drug and alcohol levels. So we're looking at things like the size of your pupil, the color of your eyes, and then how it reacts to different stimuli like light.
So you figured out that when a person is maybe impaired in some way, their eye is a clue to what the impairment is or how impaired they are?
It is. So depending how intoxicated they are and what they are under the influence of, whether it's alcohol, marijuana, amphetamines, benzodiazepines, or opiates, your eye responds differently. And so we're able to dissect that using the software.
Now, what happens like if I'm on, like I ate a big meal or if I had a lot of caffeine, does my eye react for those stimuli as well?
So your eye is full of a lot of rich data, and drug and alcohol levels are not the only thing that you can determine from it. You can identify yourself from your eyes. You can determine different medical ailments that one may have. And so caffeine, it will have certain characteristics if it's under the influence of caffeine. And so what we're doing is specifically targeting drug and alcohols to see how the eye behaves in those instances so that we're able to detect those in particular.
So then if someone's using the software, they're able to take a photo of the eye in some manner, and then they can the software is going to say, okay, this person is impaired or this person is on this substance.
Exactly.
So like each substance has like kind of a signature that everybody who is on it, their eye behaves in a similar manner.
Exactly.
So how'd you figure that out?
Well, that's a deep question. So I've been studying eye behavior since about 2012. And I first started dissecting eye behavior for education. And so you can determine levels of engagement based off of the size of your pupil. And so I was applying that to my PhD research that monitored engagement levels during math education. Move forward, I took a position at Emory, and then we also started analyzing eye behavior to detect early onset Alzheimer's. And so that's when I learned that the eye is very rich data source and that you can determine a lot of things from it. Fast forward to the reason why we ended up in the domain of drug and alcohol. I actually was in a marriage and my husband at the time had a drinking problem. And so I was able to witness all aspects of being under the influence when a person doesn't think that they're under the influence, and you can see it in their eyes, when they are under the influence and they still decide to drive. And when a person is extremely intoxicated, I was able to witness the spectrum and see just the different, the changes in the eye while going through that process. Now, the marriage didn't make it through the drug problem or an alcohol problem. However, the business was born. And the goal of the business is to be able to help individuals who have a hard time seeing that they have a problem from a peer or somebody who truly loves them and just wants the best for them. If they can hear it from a non-biased indicator, such as a mobile application where it can tell them privately, hey, you probably shouldn't get behind the wheel. You probably should call an Uber tonight. And that can be received a lot easier than hearing it from another human being.
So when this was going down, it was only because you were so immersed in studying the eye that you kind of connected the dots where, hey, something I can tell, he's saying he's not drinking, but then his eyes are telling me a different story. Is that So that was the genesis of kind of putting two and two together that this can work in that environment as well.
Exactly. So I wasn't even a thought until I went through that experience. And because I was already tunnel vision into eye behavior, it was something that I noticed almost instantly. And so,
whereas like if you were a lay person, you wouldn't necessarily have connected those dots. It was just so you were just so, you know, paying attention to eye behavior so much. And then you were seeing eye behavior and then you were like, hey, this is what I'm studying in a different environment. And this is telling me something else.
Exactly. Exactly.
So now, how did the, okay, so you have the idea that there's a way that if people are intoxicated, I can tell that by their eyes. Then how did kind of the technology part of the equation come into play? Like, are you a technologist that you say, oh, there must be an app for that, or I'm going to, maybe I can use my phone to be able to tell?
Well, yeah. So I received my PhD from Georgia Tech in electrical engineering. And as I mentioned, you know, I was studying eye behavior for engagement in math education, and I was actually using robotics. So I built a few mobile applications as well as desktop applications for math education. And then moving over to my research that I did studying Alzheimer's, I also developed a mobile application and a desktop application that tracked eye behavior to monitor different patterns with the eye. So I've been programming and doing different types of technology pretty much since college. So that's kind of where it came from. And then I also went back to school to get my MBA. And that's when the whole business switch clicked on for me, like, oh, I can make a business out of this. And so it was a culmination of all of those things.
Because at first the path was more academic and then like clinical. And then when you saw that there was a business opportunity here, and then you were filling a gap maybe in how people can tell if somebody is intoxicated or not.
Exactly. There was definitely an unmet need because eye tracking isn't new and studying eye behavior isn't new. But more so for the domain of drug and alcohol, I did not see a solution there and I didn't see an application for it. Now, you know, we have the breathalyzer, but that's non-invasive and it only tests for alcohol. So there was a gap there and I'm trying to fill that gap with iGauge.
So now in terms of your business, where you're at, are you at the stage where there's working models out there in the wild? Is this kind of at the beginning stages where you're testing?
We're definitely at the beginning stages where we're testing. We have some underlying, we have an MVP, our prototype that's working, but we need to test a lot more subjects in order to make our algorithms more robust. But we're hoping to have a release by the end of 2020. So we're excited about that.
And then do you have any law enforcement that's testing it, like using it in the wild to just see, you know, just collect more data?
So we're partnering with Georgia Tech Police Department. And so we're in conversations with them now to get them to start running tests with us. But we are developing the software to meet their needs. And so it's kind of a give take there. And we're more so positioning law enforcement as a strategic partner and not necessarily a customer. So that we can focus more directly on the consumers and the people who are most at risk, and then also companies who are interested in using the software if they have employees that use heavy equipment. But because law enforcement, they've already done a lot of the research, they already have their tests, they have drug recognition experts, and they have experts for DUIs, they already have a lot of the methods tested. And so we want to piggyback off of that and build from that.
So you're looking at the consumer, maybe a parent or an employer?
Parents are most at-risk individuals. So most at-risk individuals are people with prior DUIs, motorcyclists, and then young adults. Those would be the users. So yeah, the customers could potentially be parents as well.
Right. The user, but is the user going to raise their hand and say, well, I better get this app because I want to, you know, like they know they're intoxicated. It's the people around them that may not know.
Very, very true. And so the parents and then loved ones, family members would be the people that we want to target as the customers.
And then Do you have kind of a strategy on, okay, say that you're targeting a parent because they're worried about their kid. Is there kind of a methodology of, okay, these are how you have these. These are kind of difficult conversations. This is a tool to use to help get the help for your kid. Are you working on things like that?
We are. Right now we're heads down in the development of the software. And so closer to the end of 2020, we will have all that ironed out so that it's palatable for parents and so that, you know, the user can receive it well. We definitely don't want to push them away and we don't want the users being defensive. So we definitely, you know, want to put the research into it so that the psychology is behind it so that the user will actually use it. If that makes sense.
And then the software, in order to use it, is it as simple as just taking a photograph, or you have to like get zoom in super close to the eye? Like how do you use it?
So it would be a picture of the eye. The application will tell you how close you need to be, and it will let you know whether or not you're at a optimal distance in order to capture the picture. And then in addition, it also captures a short video so that we can see how the eye responds as well. Over a period of time. And so just by collecting those two data points, we're able to run an analysis and then give the customer a solution.
So it's not something I could do this kind of covertly and just take a picture of someone's eye and then to tell me, hey, there's a likelihood this person's under the influence. Like there, it's a protocol that I have to go through for a period of time in order to really test to see if the person's intoxicated.
Well, you definitely can't do it covertly. We want to make sure that we have consent. And it is, once you do it, it's a matter of seconds in order to capture the data. And so it can be done quickly, but you have to have consent from the person before you capture a picture of their eyes.
Now, at what point did you kind of, the light bulb go off and say, hey, this is something that's going to be a business? Was it the going through the thing with your husband that was the trigger, or did somebody say, hey, this is, you got something here?
No, I definitely was not thinking about it when I was going through it. As you can imagine, it was a lot of other things going through my mind at the time, but it wasn't until I was, you know, disconnected from the situation and I was going through my MBA program at Georgia Tech. I was introduced to the Georgia Tech CreateX Accelerator, which is basically an accelerator for businesses that kind of help them get off the ground. And I had some mentors in that department, and basically just having conversation with them and cultivating relationships with my peers in the MBA program, the idea came about. So it definitely, I wasn't in the marriage saying, oh, I can make a business out of this.
Right. But I didn't know at some point you went through it and you're like, hey, this was terrible for me, but I did get this bit of information that this is something maybe other people can benefit from.
Definitely. And I definitely walked away with all of that information and with firsthand experience, knowing that something was there. And because I've studied eye behavior in the past, I knew that it was enough distinction in his eyes. And I was like, okay, maybe this can be applied to more than just, you know, my ex-husband. This can be applied to
lots
the general
of people.
Public.
Yeah. Because mm-hmm. You're not the only person going through something like that. That's for sure. Now, growing up, you were getting involved in technology, I guess, at a super young age. Is that something that's always interested to you?
Yeah, I've always been a tinkerer. My dad is a mechanic and he used to take me under the car. And then in grade school, I was always drawn to math and applied sciences like physics. I excelled extremely fast in those classes, and I took AP classes, and I was awarded a full scholarship to Norfolk State University, which is a historically Black college in Norfolk, Virginia.
Now, when you were growing up, we do a lot of work with the Women in Technology group here and a lot of women business associations. At some point I'm always trying to get insight on this. At some point there were less and less girls with you on your journey. Mm-hmm. And I always try to understand, like, what do you think it is that creates that kind of split where, only a handful of girls and women, especially of color, go down this STEM path?
Well, I believe that it's the exposure component. I believe that a lot of girls aren't choosing to go down that path, and necessarily our Black girls aren't choosing to go down that path because they aren't exposed to it and they truly don't know what it is. And so I think that if we're able to expose more underrepresented youth to these STEM fields, then we're able to have, you know, more people as adults in these environments.
But like when you were going down this path, you had peers and friends, mm-hmm. and weren't they like kind of at least curious about what you were up to, but they kept, you know, slowly, I'm sure over time they were dropping off. There were less of them as you progress farther.
Well, I don't actually think that I am a good example because I wasn't exposed to it besides my father being a mechanic, but I didn't participate in STEM camps and, you know, summer camps and after school robotics courses or classes and things like that. I just had a natural knack for science and technology. And so exposure wasn't there for me or, you know, my classmates when I was growing up. And they may have needed that exposure that I didn't need in order to excel to that next level.
Mm-hmm. So you were just very kind of curious and you just pursued the interest that you pursued and you didn't care that you were the kind of the only person that looked like you in that environment. Just kept going boldly forward.
Correct. I did not have a role model as far as somebody in front of me that was doing the things that I was doing. And so I kind of made that my mission to do everything so that I can be that role model for the next.
Well, congratulations on that. That is a, you know, that's fantastic that you're doing that and wanting to be the role model for others because there wasn't one for you. You're paving the path for others. That's super important.
Thank you.
Now, in your work now, are you finding mentors that are helping you get your business to the next level? Or are you still having to go at it alone?
Oh, no, I definitely have mentors, advisors, I mean, colleagues that are very helpful and beneficial. I definitely don't have to figure out this business on my own blindly. And I'm very thankful for those individuals who have assisted me. So actually, one of my advisors is my former PhD advisor. So I've known her for 10 years now. And so it's a great relationship and she's been there every step of the way, even since I graduated. So
now what was the impetus to get involved with the CreateX program?
Say that again.
Why, how'd you choose to get involved with that CreateX program?
So some of the professors in the MBA program, they're also coaches for CreateX. And so that's how I was, they brought the idea to me and just through conversation and they said that I would be a great, iGage would be a great business to join it. They provided resources such as legal resources to kind of help us get our business established, work on our IP, our intellectual property, patents, trademarks to get that off the ground. They offered accountants so that we can figure out, you know, how we wanted to establish our business, whether it's LLCs or a corp. And then the tax benefits. And so the accelerator, I mean, it accelerated our business for lack of better words, but it was pitched to me that it would be great for iGage and I took the opportunity. Now, of course, we had to apply and we were selected. And so we were one of maybe 70 businesses, but it was a great opportunity. And they also offered all of the businesses a $4,000 grant. And so we could use that to establish the business and submit the initial patents and trademarks that we needed to get going.
Now, are you you're part of that group? Are you part of any other groups? Like ATDC or any of the other kind of?
Yes. And so by default, I am a part of ATDC. Well, not by default. I, as a student at Georgia Tech, and I'm technically a student through December, we gain access to ATDC. I have mentors at ATDC that assisted with the CreateX program. And so we're tied with them through that. I recently just participated in Startup Runway. And so that's a pitch competition that's sponsored by a lot of these different organizations in the Atlanta area. And I know I'm missing some. I know I'm missing up. And there's also a program in Atlanta. It's called Start It Up Georgia, where we have weekly lessons that we have on Monday and then a community group session. So I participate in that as well.
Wow. Busy, busy, busy. Now, what do you need more of? How can we help you?
Ooh, what do I need more of? Where to start?
Do you need more money, funding, more kind of talent, more people to beta test?
So, yes. So we're not at the point where we're accepting investments of any sort. So we are heads down in developing the technology. And so that won't be more so until January 2021, where we're looking for investors. However, we are in the process. We need beta testers. We actually need to run some human subject testing or clinical trials. And we're also hiring talent. So software developers, UX developer designers, and that's pretty much it through the end of 2020.
Now, if somebody wanted to learn more about what you're up to, is there a website?
There is a website. It is eygage.com, eygage.com. And there you can find all our links to our social media accounts, some information about us, a pitch we have on YouTube. And that should be enough to get you started, and also a contact. And so you can actually contact me at lavonda@igage.com.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. You're doing important work and you're being a role model to other people. That's just fantastic. We really appreciate you.
Thank you so much for having me this morning.
All right. This is Lee Cantor. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio. And remember, this work would not be possible without the support of our sponsor, OnPay. So please support them so we can continue to share these important stories.
Today's episode of Atlanta Business Radio is brought to you by OnPay. Built in Atlanta, OnPay is the top-rated payroll and HR software anywhere. Get 1 month free at onpay.com. We'll be right back.